Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It's Pau Hana Friday. It's also Good Friday. It's also Passover, so happy whatever to the people who are out there celebrating. And my wife is out at the store right now. We're buying Easter goodies for our neighbor kids who moved in just this last year into our little part of the neighborhood, and they really do brighten up the place to just be able to sit here working in the office, and out the window we hear the sounds of kids running around and breaking things. So, you know, we're going to do a drive-by Easter egging here sometime over the weekend. I should have said Happy Ishtar, because the myth of Ishtar is one of the possible sources of the word Easter. And, of course, back in that time in history, death and resurrection was kind of a standard, almost a requirement for mythological creatures, whether you were Ishtar or Tammuz or Osiris or whoever. It was sort of like if you couldn't die and come back to life, then you weren't in the big leagues here. So happy Ishtar and happy holidays to everybody. On a more serious note, the other day we ran a story about how modern genetics is starting to catch up with a lot of the assumptions that people have in dealing with the Middle East crisis. And we talked about this report that had been published, Serious Science Journal, basically saying that there was virtually no genetic difference between the present-day Palestinians and the Middle Eastern Jewish people. Now, we know that despite all the talk about a Jewish people, that the world's Jewish population is actually made up of the descendants of a great many converted other people. The Ashkenazis are descended from the Khazars of Central Asia, the Sephardics. Some of them are descended from Judea. Others are descended from converted Berbers, and so forth and so on. You know, a lot of conversions, a lot of people moving around. So the upshot of this is that, and one of the most incredible ironies of history, the present-day Palestinians, at least 50% of them, show a clear genetic link going back to the biblical Hebrews. The present-day Palestinians, and it makes sense, they're sitting on the same piece of real estate, the present-day Palestinians are the descendants of the Israelites portrayed in the Bible. And a reader of WhatReallyHappened.com wrote in with what makes a huge amount of sense to me, and I'm going to put this out here, and it's probably going to upset a lot of people. And that's fine, because that's kind of what the show is all about, is to shake you loose from your preconceptions and get you thinking about the world in slightly different ways. According to the Bible, Jesus had siblings. There is no reason to assume that either of Jesus' parents was an only child, or that their parents were only children. So, we may assume that the odds are that Jesus was part of a much larger extended family, with uncles and aunts and nieces and nephews and so forth and so on. It makes perfect sense, you know. And it therefore stands to reason that that genetic heritage is still present in the Palestinian population. Just as, you know, over generations, that influence from a single individual spreads out and spreads out, where after you've had enough generations, everybody can claim descent from Charlemagne, that kind of situation. So here's the point they're making. Israel, during Operation Cast Lead, is killing members of Jesus' extended family. And we, the American people, who are supposedly in large part Christians, are paying for the weapons that did it. For the white phosphorus that was dropping all over. And just a couple of days ago, another ship full of weapons provided by the United States has been delivered in Israel. And I know there are a lot of Christians out there who say, we've got to support Israel because they're in the Bible and they're this and they're that. Okay, well, you've got to start thinking it all the way through about the consequences. Because if, in fact, the Palestinians are the genetic inheritors of the biblical Israelites, and the science seems to say that they are, then some of them are family, blood relatives of Jesus. And these are the people the weapons you're paying for are killing. You might want to think what that means. You might get up there to St. Peter's Gate, and St. Peter's going to say, you know, you helped kill some of the boss's kinfolk, and he ain't taking too kindly to that. You go to the other place. So you just think about that one for a while, because when this reader wrote this in, I said, oh, boy, yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, there have to be people walking around this planet today who share that genetic heritage. The great-great-great-great-great-nieces and great-great-great-great-great-nephews of Jesus. And this doesn't even get into the issue about whether Jesus and Mary Magdalene have kids. That's another whole topic. And if they did, they were extant in southern France, which is where the Catholic Church went in and wiped out the Cathars and then sent in the Inquisition and basically mopped up the rest of them. That's a whole separate issue. So even without going into the idea about whether Jesus and Mary Magdalene had kids, okay, for the purpose of this argument, we will stipulate they did not. But Jesus did have brothers and sisters and nieces and nephews, and he had parents and aunts and uncles and all the rest of that. And the descendants of all those people are probably still alive today. And these are the people we're dropping, or the Israel's dropping white phosphorus on, and you get to pay for it. Now, you think about that one this holiday weekend. Anyway, welcome to our show, and again, our phone number is 800-259-9231, and Donovan's in the control room. He's twiddling the dials and hovering his phone, his hand over the telephone, ready to grab that as soon as it rings. Now, obviously, this being a holiday, the financial markets are closed, and, you know, the stock market is not doing anything today, but I want to go back to what we were talking about yesterday when we had this huge upsurge. The market went up a couple of hundred points back in the 8,000s. Everybody's cheering, yes, and was all based on Wells Fargo announcing a $3 billion fourth quarter expected profit. It sounds really good. And the stock market said, yes, we're buying stocks on that. Okay, Wells Fargo just took a $25 billion loan from the taxpayers. Now, I'll tell you quite honestly, if you loan me $25 billion, I'm sure I can rig the books somewhere to predict a $3 billion profit the next quarter, which will make me look very good in the stock market, and you'll come in and bring in that money. But you also need to remember that Wells Fargo, during the beginning of this whole bailout situation, they absorbed Wachovia, and Wachovia absorbed these other people, and all of their toxic assets are still sitting in this toxic bailout fund to the tune of $865 billion. Wells Fargo is basically blowing smoke when they're saying a $3 billion profit. What they may have is $3 billion in extra cash floating around, but it's coming out of the billions and billions of dollars they're looting from the American taxpayer. And this gets back to what I've been telling you all along. Right now, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is not a measure of the health of the American economy. It's a gas gauge, and it's measuring the money that is being taken from the public treasury and poured into the financial sector. They're taking money from people who don't have it to give to people who already do. And this idea that the stock market represents a rebound for the nation itself is sheer, utter nonsense. Go look at the shopping malls. Go look at all the commercial vacancies that we're seeing. Stores are closing everywhere. They're going out of business. Unemployment continues to go up. They're trying to use the Dow Jones as a political banner, the way they did back in the Clinton administration. And hopefully, I'm not even going to say hopefully, I know that you are all smart enough to not fall for it a second time. Because if you weren't smart enough to know it, you wouldn't be tuned into this show right now. And that's where we are on that. Now, turning away from the financial situation, I wanted to get into this story here about the thermite, which we now know has been confirmed by some serious scientific research in a peer-reviewed science journal, confirming the presence of the remains of thermite in the ruins of the World Trade Tower. Thermite is a material very hot. Oh, my goodness, how time flies when you're having fun. All right, we're going to come back to the thermite after the break. Join us on the air, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
is Cascadia Public Radio.
To the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And we were talking about one of the key eyewitnesses to the disaster of 9/11. His name was Barry Jennings. He was the individual who had reported and been quoted on in the media, reporting hearing explosions in World Trade Center 7 prior to its actual collapse. And he had been interviewed on some of the Alex Jones videos. He'd been interviewed on BBC. He had started going a little bit more public. And then just before the NIST report was about to come out and the BBC's big special, oh, you conspiracy people are all a bunch of nutcases, presentation came out, Barry Jennings passed away. And it was very strange because there were rumors and nobody could confirm it. It supposedly happened last August. And by the time it was finally being acknowledged that he had passed away, of course, he'd already been buried and it was gone and nobody knew anything and nobody would talk. All very mysterious. We heard one report that it was a suicide. We heard another report that he was in the hospital for several days before passing away. No details at all. And the obvious inference here is that had Barry Jennings been alive and healthy at the time the NIST and BBC reports came out, the fact that they directly contradicted his eyewitness testimony would have brought more attention to him. And he would have been asked to do more interviews, and he would have said, look, this is what we heard. And if you go look at the videotapes being shot on the day, you will hear other people saying, yes, we're hearing explosions in the buildings before they come down. But mysteriously, he passes away. He was age 53, and no real explanation for why all of a sudden he died. Now, that happened last August, and the fear has kind of sort of settled down. But now that we know for a fact that thermite was found in the remains of the World Trade Towers, and it's not something that should have been there to begin with, obviously, then I think it's time to go back and take a much closer look at just how and why Barry Jennings passed away and start demanding answers and saying, we need to know, was it natural causes? Was it really suicide? Was he suicided? Or did something else go on? Because we know the government is lying to us about 9/11, just as they lied to us about Saddam's nuclear bombs, just as they are lying to us now that Iran's power station is some kind of a threat, just as they're lying that North Korea's communication satellite is some kind of a threat. So, got some dead witnesses here. We need some answers. We definitely need some answers. Turning back to the economy real quick, Detroit will close another 23 schools this fall. They're running out of money. They don't have the money to run the schools. The money is simply going away. The whole system is grinding to a halt. And it's grinding to a halt because all the money is being pulled out of our society, out of the state governments, out of the local governments, out of our pockets, out of our stores, out of our businesses, and it's being handed to the Wall Street bankers by the trillions, trillions and trillions of dollars. There has been more government spending on our backs in the last 6 months than in pretty much the rest of our nation's history. It has reached that point, that sheer volume of spending. Interestingly enough, you know, there is more and more anger, if you will, building toward these protests that are going to take place on the 15th on tax day. They're talking about tea parties in every city of the United States. They're talking about at least 2,000 of them already. Various other tax protests where they're going to be hanging tax collectors in effigy. And they're going to be saying, you know, it's enough. We're taxed too much. We're being taxed into poverty to make rich people richer. We're being taxed into poverty to send money to Israel. We're being taxed into poverty to make things that kill people who haven't really done anything to us. We're being taxed into poverty so we can go out and invade other parts of the world that happen to have mineral wealth that our corporations want to have. And so now to counter this, okay, you're going to love this piece of propaganda. This is funny. This is funny. Barack Obama's supporters, and of course everybody who loves high taxation, are trying to put out this idea that opposition to taxes is a GOP plot against Barack Obama. That only Obama haters would find taxes objectionable. That real Americans love to shovel the money into the furnace just as fast as they can. And that all these tea parties, and they're just there to score points for the Republicans. It's not a real uprising by the American people against taxes. It's not a real tax revolt. It's just a staged GOP photo op. And, you know, you hear something like that, and there's this irresistible magnetic force between the palm of your hand and your forehead, and there's this loud smack, and you say, are these people on drugs? $100,000 per taxpayer has been added to all of our bills in the last 6 months, and they think the only reason we're complaining about the high levels of taxation is because we don't like Barack Obama. I mean, that is just lame. Is this the best they can come up with? Man, oh man. You know, there's an interesting story here. Apparently, the Centers for Disease Control has discovered that the drinking water in Washington, D.C. has very high levels of lead, high enough where studied subjects are showing psychological effects. And yet the CDC sat on this. They actually massaged the data so they could say, well, yeah, there's some lead in the water, but it's not so bad. And now we're finding out it's been another cover-up. They didn't want to spend the money to put into the municipal water system, and they got all this lead toxicity, and we know how bad lead is. And it's affecting people's minds in Washington, D.C. I think we have an explanation for why the propaganda coming out of the White House is so lame. They're suffering lead poisoning. I think that explains a lot about the decision-making that we've seen coming out of Washington, D.C. and the Congress and the White House. Their brains are fried. You know, forget about your brain on drugs. This is your brain on Washington, D.C. civil tap water. And I know, they spend a lot of money on Perrier and champagne and booze and everything, but they drink tap water. It's used in the food. They shower in it. What if it's a real factor? What if the seat of the United States government, the water, has been frying the brains of our political leadership? That would explain a lot for the last couple of years. Anyway, we're going to go to the phones. I know we're almost at the end of the segment, so we're going to have to keep you over the commercial break, but we're going to go to Dimitri in California. Aloha, Dimitri. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? Is Dimitri not there? Going once, going twice. I guess he just dropped. Okay. Well, sorry about that, Dimitri, and sorry that you lacked the patience there, but hey, what can I tell you? It's Good Friday, and it's time to go out and do the chocolate egg thing here and rot our teeth away. So getting back to international politics, as we all know, about 90 miles off the tip of Florida, there's this little tiny island called Cuba. And it's been in the news lately because of this little U.S. military base there called Guantanamo, in which we have been doing some very unpleasant things. And when we get back from this commercial break, we're going to be talking about the unpleasant things in Guantanamo and the recent push to develop normal diplomatic relations with Cuba. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show today. And I want to touch on a topic. I have gotten so much email about this. And I understand why a lot of people are very upset about this. And this is about the idea of a Passover Seder being held in the White House. And it's a complicated issue. Because I understand that even though the White House is a government building, paid for by the taxpayers, it is provided as a personal residence to the president and their family. and that within that private residence area, obviously expressions of personal religious belief, you know, must be allowed. You know, that just as a courtesy. But to the best of my knowledge, and if anybody has information to the contrary, please call in. I don't think Barack Obama and his family are Jewish. And I'm reading this report from Haaretz right now, basically saying that the whole purpose for this Seder is to produce a public sign that the new president, you know, is going to fulfill his promise that Jewish voters would have an ally in the White House. And how wonderfully charming that he wants to fulfill his promises. I just wish he'd fulfilled his promises about bringing our kids home from Iraq and prosecuting the torture and ending the abuses of the Constitution. Those were promises, too. Nobody seems to be in a rush to fulfill those. But the issue I have here, and so many of my readers do, is that if Barack Obama is not himself Jewish, and if he's doing this as a political exercise, then this Seder is a violation of the First Amendment separation of church and state, in which the U.S. government is not supposed to show preference for any one religion over any other. Did not Barack Obama make promises to Christians? Did he not make promises to Muslims who live in the United States? Did he not make the same promises to the followers of Zoroaster here in the United States? Or the voodoo witch doctors? There are still some of those around there. Or the Mormons? Why are they not getting these kinds of ceremonies in the White House? And I think a lot of people are very concerned. Our U.S. government seems under the thumb of Tel Aviv. And far from a public sign that Obama is fulfilling his promise that Jewish voters have an ally, this is a public sign that the White House is now Israeli-occupied territory. And I think that's how it's being perceived across the country. Now, as I said, if Barack Obama and his family were themselves Jewish, I wouldn't have a problem with this. I really wouldn't. But it looks to me like they're just carrying out this ritual, and in a way, it's kind of being hypocritical. It's like somebody going into a church that they don't normally attend, and they don't believe the principles, and they go through the motions just to look like they fit in. That would be considered somewhat hypocritical. I actually, believe it or not, a while back was invited to become a member of the Freemasons. And I said I was very honored by the invitation, but because the Freemasons require professing of a belief in a great architect, I said I couldn't do that. And I was not going to dishonor the person who had extended the invitation to me by claiming to have a belief that I do not. That, to me, is the honorable way to handle that kind of a situation. And I've gotten a lot of emails on this situation, and yeah, I think it sends exactly the wrong signal to the American people. I don't care what signal it's sending to the Jewish voters, who represent, as I understand it, 2% of the population of this country. But I think it's sending a very bad message to everybody else. And one of the people in the chat room is saying, and Obama taught constitutional law? Well, you know, those who can do, do. Those who can't, teach. I guess he's not as smart about the Bill of Rights as we all hoped he might be. All right, moving right along here. And by the way, if you're Jewish, happy Passover. You know, when I was married to my first wife, I used to go through the Seder every year, and so I don't have a problem with that. What I have a problem with here is this mixing of politics and religion at a time when the whole legitimacy of our government is hanging by a thread. Okay, side note, a little more of a light story here. You probably heard it on the break. I love this kind of stuff. The British government blew a ton of the British taxpayers' money on this video surveillance system that was going to look at faces in the airport and match them against known terrorists and their passports and make sure they weren't trying to do anything funny. And they got a hit that Osama bin Laden had been detected walking through the airport where they were testing out this system. And it turned out the system had spotted actress Winona Ryder, and had just somehow, within the depths of its computer mind, had decided there was a 50% chance that this was Osama bin Laden trying to sneak through the airport. And you look at this and you realize that all of these projects for homeland security, the electronic noses, the training to see if people are slightly nervous but not too nervous, and all the rest of that stuff, it's never going to work. They're never able to get it to work. It's just another way to loot the taxpayers and spend money on these boondoggles and give the money to favored cronies who've come up with a lame brain idea that doesn't have a chance of working. And it's just a hideous waste of money, and it's a way of handing out favors. The people who've got these dumb ideas, like these facial recognition systems and all the rest, they're campaign donors. And they say, okay, I helped you get elected, now I've got this idea. And they say, yes, here's your money, go do your idea. And it turns out to be another waste of money. I mean, look at, in the United States, the no-fly list. There are over a million people on it, to the best of anybody's knowledge. They don't have a real terrorist on that list. Got a bunch of kids, a bunch of congressmen. The list is a joke. It's completely ineffective. And they're saying, well, you know, we've got a few false positives, but it'll keep the dangerous people off the airplane. How do you know that? How can you know that? If you have people on that list who shouldn't be there, then the credibility of the entire list is in doubt. And if you've got a million people on the list, and we'll say, just for the sake of argument, five of them are terrorists, what's the point? The list is functionally useless. You're just keeping everybody off the plane, and you don't know if they're a terrorist or not. Now, on that very subject, a couple of weeks ago, actually last week, we had this individual by the name of Steve Bierfeldt, who, going through an airport in St. Louis, was stopped by the Transportation Safety Administration and basically interrogated for having what they believed was an excess amount of money in his pocket. He was just coming from a political function. He basically had donations, checks, and cash that he was taking back to his base of operations and, you know, just had the money. And it's a legitimate reason to have the money, and he gets flagged by TSA. They take him in the back room, and fortunately, Steve was able to activate the recording device on his cell phone, and he recorded a tape which has gone viral all over the net where these guys are just grilling him, and they're arrogant, and they're bullying. And all Steve keeps saying is, you know, what is the legal authority for you to be asking me these questions? And the TSA guys are saying, well, we're going to report you to DEA, and we're going to do this, and we're going to get the FBI, and you're never going to get on your airplane. You better do it. And just bullying, just sheer bullying. And Steve just keeps saying, what is the legal authority for you to be doing what you're doing? And, of course, now the tape has gone viral, and it makes the TSA look like a bunch of uniformed thugs, which is kind of what they looked like before anyway, but it just reinforces the notion. And so early today, over on the website where Steve does his business and the story was being put out, there was a comment posted which was very supportive of the TSA and very abusive of Steve, and basically said that, you know, you're not supposed to carry large amounts of money. You should have bought a money order. There's no reason for this moron to be carrying that much cash. You know, he should go to jail just for being that dumb. And just on and on and on and on, and say, you know, the TSA is asking questions to make you idiots feel safe and blah, blah, blah. Turns out it was a TSA employee using the TSA's computers on the taxpayer's time to go in and post this rebuttal. My comments, my reply to the TSA after these words from our sponsors.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means...
Which means they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We will not spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the final segment of our show today. Man, it is just whipping by. I had so much to talk about, but fortunately, we will be back tomorrow live at 11 a.m. Central Time, where we'll be covering the rest of this stuff and, you know, your phone calls and whatever else that's going on. Anyway, I want to get back to this thing. This, you know, every once in a while something will happen that just angers me so much. So this guy, apparently somebody over at the Department of Homeland Security, okay, got onto the websites and started posting this stuff about how Steve Bierfeldt should be in jail, that he's a moron, that he's this, that he's that, the TSA are wonderful, they're there to protect us, and basically propagandizing us. And at the same time insulting us, calling us idiots, calling us morons. This is a person whose salary is paid by the taxpayers. The office he sits in is paid for by the taxpayers. The computer he's using is paid for by the taxpayers. And he's busy out there surfing the net on our dime in order to go out and scream insults at people who are justifiably upset at the way TSA are treating us at the airports. Now, I live in the state of Hawaii. And our economy is still primarily dependent on tourism. And, folks, we are in trouble. So are other states that are dependent on tourism. You can see they're running ads all over the place. You've got the governor that say, yo, come on over to California. When can you start? And we're going to do this. And we're going to take your money because we really need it. And he's, and you know, all over the place. And here in Hawaii, we are, you know, I mean, the hotels are empty. I mean, if you want to brave TSA and come out here, it's a great time to get here because everything's on sale. You know, but we were in Waikiki the other night for the season wrap party for this TV show that I work on, and the place was a ghost town. It was empty, you know, and there's signs everywhere, you know, half price this and cut rate this, and, you know, it's just, you know, it's just amazing. And the reason is the economy is part of it, but we were in this trouble before the crash last September, and the reason, study after study shows, is because the TSA abuses people coming through the airports. Nobody is going to go on a vacation at a destination where they're being treated like prisoners of war, going in and coming back out. I've got friends who used to come here on a regular basis who say that to me. We don't want to come there anymore. We're treated like POWs coming in. Who needs that on a relaxing vacation? And it's not just Hawaii. Same thing in Florida. Same thing in California. Same thing anywhere in the United States that is an international tourist destination. People don't want to come here because they're abused by the TSA. So the TSA is in large part responsible for the economic decline of those parts of our country that are dependent on tourism dollars. And we're in trouble. And I think the public attitude is shifting. Because I had written about this very topic for the local newspapers here in Hawaii before. Finally, just last week, they actually printed one of my letters. So the attitude is definitely shifting. People are willing to stand up and say, yeah, we're starving, we're losing our businesses because these arrogant TSA guys at the airport, you know, are treating people like they're treating this Steve Bierfeldt. So my comment to the TSA is, you know, first of all, this guy who got on and said, well, you know, that wasn't TSA, that was the police doing it. You can hear on the tape, the interrogator is saying he's going to be calling the police. So we're obviously dealing with the TSA. They talk about the checkpoint. That's something that's manned by TSA, not the police. Okay? And as far as the guy carrying the money in his pocket, it is none of TSA's business how we carry our money or how much we carry or where or when. Until you catch us committing a crime, it is none of your business. Steve had a legitimate reason to be carrying that money. It was donations to support the very good work that they're doing. I had a friend who was on his way to a trade show. He was in the plant and flower business, and that's a cash and carry business. And he was on his way to the show. This was before TSA, whoever TSA's predecessor was. They confiscated his money. He lost his business before he could get the money back. I mean, it's just abusive. The mere act of carrying too much money is now a crime in the United States of America. And they keep saying, well, this is because of the war on drugs, and we've got to have this, you know, methods of... Do you really think the drug smugglers are carrying that kind of money through the airport turnstiles? You know, I mean, you know, they go on Evergreen Air and they fly up on, Fat Alice or whatever the name of Barry Seal's airplane. They've got their own Air Force to bring the drugs into the country. and bring the money back and forth. They don't need the commercial planes. It's none of TSA's business how we run our private lives. It is not their place to presume to tell us how we should and should not live our lives. TSA's job is to find bombs. And according to the Department of Homeland Security's own tests, TSA succeeds only half the time. TSA's job is to find terrorists, not terrorize law-abiding people when no threats can be found and they're bored and don't have anything else to do. By DHS own tests, TSA can't do the job they're supposed to be doing. So they're fondling people, they're annoying people, they're bullying people, they're dropping and wrecking laptops and confiscating nail clippers to cover up their feelings of inadequacy. And I think we're done with this. We're done with this. We're fed up. We know what they are at the airport. They're not making our lives safer. Studies by the Harvard Business School says they're not making our lives safer. It's just a dog and pony show. It's a game. It's theater to keep us all cowered and scared and make us imagine that the U.S. government really cares about the safety of the American people, even as they go lying about nuclear weapons to invade Iraq and Afghanistan and Iran and Pakistan and whoever else they're planning the next war on. You talk about the war on terror. I know how to end terrorism. Stop screwing around with other people's countries. Nobody gets up in the morning and says, "Now there's nothing on TV. I'm going to go blow up a school bus." Terrorism is what happens when you are messing around with other people's countries. If the U.S. would stop going into other people's countries and screwing around with them, or stop giving money to other countries to go in and screw around with other countries, there wouldn't be any terrorism. There wouldn't be any need for it. Yes, we'd still have the phonies committing false flag acts of terrorists to trick us into wars. But the good news is that they're becoming rather obvious and easy to identify the difference between the two. Because of all that lead in the tap water they're drinking in Washington, D.C., they're not really making good choices anymore. So this thing about TSA, and now on our computer equipment, on taxpayer computer equipment, on taxpayer time, on taxpayer internet connections in a taxpayer office, they're going out on the net to try and propagandize and spin and say TSA is right and we, the travelers, are wrong. And by the way, you're all idiots and morons. No, we aren't. Okay, I know what the pay scales over are at TSA. You'd probably be making more money at the fast food restaurants if you had the skills to actually flip a hamburger. And you still owe me a laptop. And if you don't quit fondling my wife, some of you are going to lose some teeth. Damn, TSA has just wrecked travel for this entire country. It really has. TSA is causing more damage to Americans than all the terrorists put together. They're wrecking our businesses. They're wrecking tourism. They're helping to destroy our economy. And then they turn around and act like they are so superior. And they call us names. Just amazing. And we put up with it. I don't know why. I think we're nearing the breaking point. I certainly am. I'm tired of putting up with this stuff. This government does not work for me when it treats me like I'm the criminal. I'm not the one who blew up the World Trade Centers. Personally, I think it was a combination of Israel and the United States government who did it. But I wasn't part of it and I didn't approve of it. So stop treating me like I'm responsible. Leave me and my laptop and my wife alone. Leave our tourists alone. They're nice people. We need them. You're chasing them all away. All right, last bit of news before we run out of the end of the show here. We're now hearing from official government sources that Social Security's surplus is disappearing in the current economic downturn. And they're saying basically Social Security benefits are going to exceed payroll taxes, and they give you a lot of numbers and so forth and so on. And they're basically saying, oh, well, you know, it's we're not going to be able to pay the benefits that we thought we were going to. This is nonsense. This Social Security trust fund was being looted all the way back to the Clinton administration. It's how he created his so-called budget surplus. He took Social Security, set aside for the baby boomers, spent it as general funds. Now they're going to blame it all on the economic downturn so the Clintons get off the hook on that one. That's it over on the show today. Have a happy Good Friday. Have a happy Seder. Whatever you're doing over the weekend, we'll be back tomorrow at 11 in the morning Central Time. Until then, stay safe. Be well. Hug your loved ones, drive carefully, especially this weekend, and Aloha, America.